Earning an executive MBA at Georgetown isn't the path of least resistance, but it does come with the greatest reward. Benefit from our strong alumni network, renowned faculty, DC location, and global residencies. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/EMBA.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com and be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Time. Join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps at facebook.com. Well, it looks like this Khashoggi incident is blowing up in the Saudis' face. It's looking more and more as more evidence come out that the Saudis executed Khashoggi in that Istanbul consulate. Now, all the details aren't out yet, and the details will. But bottom line is he walks into the consulate, doesn't walk out, and the only people in the building were the Saudis. So it's a pretty good bet. Now, there could be a lot of reasons for it. I've talked about it on this show. I don't want to talk about too much more other than it looks like the Saudis did do it. And there could be a lot of reasons. As I said, you know, Khashoggi might have wanted out. He was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood and had connections with them. And maybe he wanted out. He had a new fiance and maybe they killed him. But the evidence is piling up that the Saudi government in some form, it may not have come from the Crown Prince himself, but in some form, killed Khashoggi. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the mob, right? Ever watch The Sopranos or Casino or Goodfellas or anything like that? It's kind of like when you piss off the king, and Khashoggi, of course, was going around doing things that would piss off the king. That's kind of what happens to you. It's kind of like when Billy Batts got whacked. You know, maybe Khashoggi thought he was untouchable because he was now a columnist for the Washington Post, that he was living in the U.S. I don't know what would, you know, motivate him to walk into a Saudi embassy when he knew damn well that his life was forfeit if he were to go back to Saudi Arabia. That's why he was living in the United States in exile. That's why he was labeled as a dissident. Maybe he thought he was protected now. Maybe he thought he was a made man. But it's kind of like the Billy Batts incident. If you've ever seen Goodfellas, you know what I'm talking about. Billy Batts is a mobster. He's a made man, which meant he was untouchable. If you killed him, there would be serious repercussions. You had to have a sit down and a talk, and you better have a good reason why you need to kill him. And one of the characters in the movie, Tommy, just in a moment of anger, decides to kill him. Him and the Robert De Niro character, the Joe Pesci character is who I'm talking to, and Henry Hill is a witness and complicit in the crime. It was done in a restaurant, just like this Istanbul consulate. You know, there's a lot of talk about what was said among the men, about how he died. It's not really important that we discuss it. But it's kind of a lesson to Americans. And I'll tell you, I'll explain how. And those people haven't picked up on this. Khashoggi was a Saudi citizen. He was on Saudi soil in the Istanbul consulate. It is considered, when you're in a consulate, that's considered the land of the country that it belongs to. So he was on Saudi soil. That's why I say it was such a risk for him to go there. This is kind of the way, and as I said, the way the mob deals with things. If you piss off the king, that's what happened to you. And this is why we fought a revolution. This is why the lesson for Americans is very important. This is why we fought a revolution. Because in the old days, under kings, under queens, under the royal heads of Europe, it ran very similar to the mob. If you pissed off the king, terrible things happened to you. And there was no justice. There was no trial by jury. There was no any sense of any Western developments that we've had in law and order and justice and equality. None of that existed under the kings. If the king decided and didn't like you, or some of the nobility who were trying to ingratiate themselves with the king, that happened too a lot. A lot of times it didn't come directly from the king. It came from people that were in his court or nobility and just decided we're going to do something to protect the king because the king is more important. Everything is about the king. And the Saudi Arabian is a royalty, is a royal kingdom. Everybody answers to the king or the crown prince or whatever the royal lineage is. It's a message to us. It's why we left that system. It's why we had a revolution in 1776. And I think people should be reminded of that now. Okay? He was a Saudi citizen on Saudi soil. If the Saudis decide to butcher him like animals under Sharia law or whatever law that exists in the Saudi kingdom, that's their business. But there are going to be repercussions from it, just like there were repercussions from the Billy Batts murder in the movie Goodfellas. Just like there were repercussions even in the old days when Longshanks would execute somebody in his kingdom. There are always repercussions. It's just that it's less severe in a royal situation when you have kings and nobles. But it's a lesson to us why we don't want that system. Why we don't want a system of punishment by rage. Punishment when accusation based on arbitrary whims of the king or is their nobility. And the repercussions that will follow. Because there's no justice for anyone in that situation. And I think it's important that we understand that. You know, it's kind of like with Brett Kavanaugh. You know, the Democrats are trying to run Brett Kavanaugh. You know, and there's been some comparisons and why the left is going crazy. Because Donald Trump mentioned, well, this is like Kavanaugh. It's about innocence without guilt. It's about justice without a trial by jury. Khashoggi didn't get a trial by jury. He just walked into a consulate. And he pissed, obviously, he pissed off the king or the nobility, and his life was forfeit. He had no justice, and he ended up in a horrible way, from what I understand. It's not important to discuss it here on the show. Suffice it to say, one of the first things that's in our Constitution is the establishment of a justice system. And it's why it's so important. And it's why it's like Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, was accused of a crime by Dianne Feinstein, not by Dr. Ford. Dr. Ford said to Dianne Feinstein in confidentiality, I'm a woman and this happened, an assault, and I don't think this man should be a Supreme Court justice, but I'm asking you to keep this situation private because it's very personal and it's a very painful event in my life, and I'm sure there are other women out there, and I think you should do whatever you can to stop this man from becoming Supreme Court justice. That was entirely within the rights of Dr. Ford to do that. It wasn't within the rights of Senator Feinstein to then use that as a weapon against Brett Kavanaugh as a political tool. It damaged Dr. Ford. It damaged Brett Kavanaugh. That is justice without a trial. That is condemnation without justice. That is why it's the same. When you accuse someone and make them suffer without a trial, without evidence, without the ability to cross-examine witnesses, that is the old system that we fled. That's the same thing that happened to Khashoggi. That's why he was chopped up on that table. Because he had been accused by the king or the royal nobility or the Saudi Arabian state. You define what it is. Maybe it's because I grew up in a tougher neighborhood. You know, people have said, oh, you're insensitive about this situation. You know, you're defending Donald Trump. No, I'm not defending him. I'm just explaining to you the facts. And facts don't care about your feelings. Facts don't take a political side. The fact is Khashoggi did things that were injurious to the king of Saudi Arabia and the royal family, the people in power. As such, he knew that his life was forfeit. That's why he left Saudi Arabia, because he wanted the protections of American justice. American justice is very different. You have a right of free speech. You have a right to embarrass the king, so to speak, which is what he was doing. Arguably, he was involved in things that he shouldn't have been. But that's his right under American justice. He was an American resident. And so the Americans are naturally concerned about this development, concerned about the relationship between us and Saudi Arabia, as they should be. But make no mistake, It's very similar to the same situation when we fled in 17-7. Make no mistake, it was because he offended the king of Saudi Arabia that he's lying somewhere in body bags or chopped up or in sausage somewhere. I don't know. Who knows? Just that he's missing. It's a horrible thought. And it's why I posted the video to Facebook of a Sopranos episode. It's the same thing. You piss off the king, you piss off the queen, you piss off one of the royal family, you're going to end up that way. And you had to know that that was coming at some point, unless you take precautions. He tried to. He fled the country, and he tried to stay under American protections. That's why we shouldn't go back to that. That's why the Brett Kavanaugh thing is a relationship. It's a relationship of justice. Not that Brett Kavanaugh will ever be chopped up and made into sausage or whatever. The point remains is that he won't be. Brett Kavanaugh, that will not happen to, because the American justice system exists. And Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, and other people like that, celebrities who are now decrying the death of Khashoggi, they want to go back to a system of justice like that. They want to go back to a system where you can accuse somebody and then forces are taken out against that person. In the case of Brett Kavanaugh, they want him thrown off the Supreme Court. And they're going to run on that. In the case of Khashoggi, under Sharia law, well, you get chopped up and your head beheaded and your heads and your body parts are thrown to the wolves. That's the horror of it. That's the reality of it, too. So if you feel that I'm insensitive about this subject or that I'm defending Trump, I'm not. I'm just stating the facts. And it looks to me like the Saudis were responsible for it. But that's the business of the Saudis. Now, whether we're going to do anything about it, whether we're going to do anything about Billy Bat's death, whether there are going to be repercussions from it, well, that's a matter for diplomats to decide and people who have more power and more control over these things than me. But make no mistake, there will be repercussions. No doubt in my mind there will be repercussions. But we, as Americans, should be concerned about the possibility of returning to a system like that and why we have laws, why we have a constitution, so that people don't get chopped up on a table in a consulate, so that people aren't murdered at the will or the whim of a king. When you go back to a system where you have punishment of a crime by accusation, as they did in Brett Kavanaugh, it's the same as chopping Khashoggi up on the table. From a legal point, from a standpoint of a justice system. That's what's important for us as American citizens to recognize. Anyway, that's the last I'm going to talk on the subject. Unless the news story changes, I'm not going to mention it again. I don't want to talk about it again. I'm tired of people saying I'm defending what the Saudis did. No, I'm not. I'm saying that you understand that what Khashoggi was into under Saudi law, that's the risk you run, man. But it's also a lesson. And I want to emphasize that. That's why it's so important. That's why I'm telling people it's important we know why. Why did he walk into that embassy? Why did he do these things? Why do we think the Saudi prince was involved, or maybe elements of his court around him did it? It's important for us to discern the difference so that we can apply an American sense of justice. If people around the crown prince, but not the crown prince himself, was involved, that's key. Because we can apply the Magnitsky Act instead of taking sanctions against the Saudi Arabian state. We can't ignore our own system of justice in order to impose mob rule. And that applies to the GOP congressman as well. Let's find proof. Let's find out why he walked in there. Was he set up? Who set him up? Was he encouraged? Why did he go in there? Supposedly he went in there for paperwork on a marriage license, but that doesn't make sense at all. What's the fiancé's involvement? Did she encourage him to go into that stuff? Why would she do that? Maybe he wanted out. Maybe he didn't want to be part of whatever he was part of anymore. Maybe a deal was supposed to be struck. Who knows? That's important for you to understand so that we can know the true perpetrators here. Motive is very important in any case of a murder. Let's move on. I wanted to talk about illegal immigration today. I wanted to talk about what exactly do they mean by undocumented worker? The mass migration that's going on, the abject poverty that's coming from it. And then a little word, if we have time, on the attacks on GOP people around this nation, which seem to be increasing. We'll be right back after this brief break. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. Just a reminder, if you donate $10 or more through our Patreon, you get access to our private shows on Friday. There are other gifts waiting for you if you donate larger amounts. I would also recommend that even if you're a listener, if you listen to us more than once, donate $2 a month. You'll never miss it. Just throw it on your credit card through Patreon. I swear to you, you'll never miss a $2 donation. But if we have $2 for the thousands of listeners, from each thousands of listeners that listen to this show, we would have more than enough money to do a full show with a full staff, with writers, and with other people. You can help me make that happen with a donation. Moving on. Before we'd have any discussion about the morality or legality of mass immigration, we have to understand and define what it is. What's an undocumented worker? That's the term now. It's an illegal immigrant. Why? You know, they say there's no such thing as an illegal person. Yeah. But that's the correct term, illegal immigrant. You have immigrant to United States. You are doing so in violation of law. What does that mean? Who is that person? We have laws in our country for a reason. We have borders. Anyone living inside our borders is subject to our laws, our sense of system of justice. Our system of justice is based on what our nation has agreed to, on what is right and what is wrong. We have certain ways that we live, and all laws are done in a democracy or a republic by the consent of the governed. That's us. We decide what it is. When you travel to a country in violation of its laws. Its laws on immigration are very simple. You can come here with papers, such as is called in the United States, a green card, a permit to be here in the United States, either by a tourist, by a student, or by a worker who wants to benefit from our system and then go back home to their country and then apply what they learned about our government to those people. Those are the ways that you can come into the country. An undocumented worker, it's a nice way of saying somebody who broke the law and came here illegally. Enter our nation through various means, crawling under the wire is what I call it. But you could travel by boat, you could travel by plane. You could say that you're a tourist and apply for travel papers, a green card for 30 days and just stay forever. That's an illegal immigrant too. That's no different than someone crawling in under the wire, despite what we're being told. We're often described as illegal immigrants, as people just traveling here because they're poor and wanting to work in our lettuce fields. Well, there's a lot of people here that came on tourist visas, that came for a temporary to study in our schools or work in our country as a benefit to a company, and then hopefully take their technology and knowledge back home to help their own people. And they just stay here. They're illegal immigrants too, and they're also a threat. So when we talk about illegal immigrant or undocumented worker, they are all the same. People who are here that are violating our law. That's important for you to understand. Because people that come here in violation of our law, whatever that law may be, green cards, borders, border illegal immigration, coming in under the wire, they're all the same people under the law. Understand this. If you come here by breaking the law, that's disrespecting the law of our country. That's disrespecting the system of justice that we have all consented to. So if you expect a person who is here as an illegal immigrant to respect other laws of this country, well, that's a less likely proposition. Now, by and large, a lot of people who overstay their visa or even come here under the wire are not here to break the law. They're here to benefit from what we created. But what we created is the result of people consenting to laws by which we're governed by. And if you are here in violation of those laws, then you are not one of those people. You are trying to benefit from a system that we create and therefore are destroying that system. You are not consenting to our laws. You are not agreeing to our law of immigration. And so therefore, people who break laws will consistently break laws. The guy who's the murderer becomes a multiple murderer. The guy who robs a bank becomes a bank robber. That's how they begin to run their lives. That's why I've always said that poverty is a result of bad decision making, not lack of money. They maybe took the decision to take drugs and became addicted, drank alcohol to excess and became an alcoholic, and their life suffered for it. Or they made bad choices about their education or where to live or what to do. The same thing applies to an illegal immigrant. If they came here illegally, that's a bad decision. That's a decision where you don't have the respect or desire the respect of the people that you're going to live among. And it's very important for you to understand that, so that you can understand why illegal immigration is a threat to the security of the country that you're immigrating to. And it doesn't matter if I'm an illegal immigrant to Europe, or an African is an illegal immigrant to Saudi Arabia, or a Saudi Arabian is an illegal, that the nationality or race of someone makes no difference. None. It's a matter of law. And we have certain systems in place. And one of the things that we've learned in our travel to being one of the greatest nations in the world, if not the greatest, I arguably say the greatest, but I'll be fair. Let's be fair. Other nations do other things well, too. In our travels toward being that country, we have learned a few things. We have learned what not to do as well as what to do. And we have learned that obeying those laws has made us one of the greatest nations in the world. If you come here illegally, we have found that people who do that do not assimilate into our culture and our laws as easily as someone who does. That's something we've learned over the last 200 some odd years. We've found that people who learn the language, learn our laws, learn our customs, and agree to live by them generally do better in our society. Generally. Not always. but a pretty fair percentage of the time. And so we've made laws about that. We've said, listen, if you come here, here's the test. Here are the laws you need to learn. Here are the systems you need to follow. And here's our code of justice. Then at the end, after you've learned all these things about how and why and where we got where we were, you agree to consent to those laws. You stand up and you take an oath. Say, I pledge my allegiance to the United States of America. We used to, when I was a kid, we used to renew that pledge in schools and classrooms. But nowadays, it's considered political talk. Okay. But my attitude is very simple. If you're here as an illegal immigrant, you don't learn about our laws. You don't learn about our system of justice. Maybe even you're going to adhere to the same laws and customs that apply to you back in wherever you came from. As such, when you come here as an illegal immigrant, you tend to gravitate toward other people who feel and live as you did back in the quote-unquote old country. And as such, instead of assimilating into our culture, what you do is you set up your own country inside our borders. You tend to live with people, as I said, in communities. You'll find in many cities, in many cultures around the world, not just here in the United States, that people who have illegally immigrated to a country or come through loopholes in the law live in communities with people like themselves. We see that here in our own cities. They tend to be what? Sort of their third world country in microcosm. That's not assimilating into America. And as we import more and more third world cultures, more third world citizens in the form of illegal immigration, we begin to import their problems too. We begin to have a small mini third world country in our American cities. That's why undocumented workers, illegal immigration, whatever term you want to use, are a threat to the United States. They are a threat to our system. Because as those communities grow, if we don't do something about it, if we allow mass immigration in the form of illegal immigration, then those slums, those districts, those third world countries that have been set up inside our cities will grow. And our country itself, the things that we built over the last 200 years, will suddenly start to dissipate and become less as the third world nations in our culture grow. That's why we can't promote it. That's why we need to at least slow it down, if not stop it altogether. How do we stop that? How do we prevent mass illegal immigration? You can't prevent it all. I mean, there's always going to be somebody that overstays their visa. There's always going to be somebody that crawls in under the wire. But how do you stop it? Let's talk about that next. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. It's something shiny, something meaning for the main course. It's a fine-looking high horse. What you got in the stable? We've a lot of starving faithful. That looks tasty. That looks plenty. And we're back. How do you stop mass illegal immigration? It's a mass migration is what it is. If you view it from a sociological or psychological or historical viewpoint, what it is mass populations moving from one location in the world to another. They're fleeing poverty, fleeing the systems that basically we fled in 1776, except we didn't flee it, did we? We threw it out. We said, no, we don't want your kings here in America. We don't want your royalty. We don't want nobility. We don't want those laws. And so what did we do? We threw those people out. You know, that there were governors and governing councils in America in 1776. They were called Tories. They were called Loyalists. And what did we do? We threw them out. It wasn't like, oh, the English are coming and everybody was on board. As a matter of fact, there were some reports. There are actually less people loyal to the new government than there were to England. There were more people that wanted to stay with England. They said, hey, wait a minute, I'm an English citizen. Governors and whatnot, people who were part of the government. They had to be thrown out. They had to be rejected. That's why the king, back in 1776, One of the first things he did actually is started earlier, like in the 1770s. I think 1773 was the first. Things for another show. And so we threw them out. But they're not doing that in other countries. They're not throwing out those leaders. They're not saying to their leaders, no, we don't want you anymore. No, we don't want kings. We don't want strong men. We don't want dictators. We don't want socialism. No, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is, let's just go to America where it's better. And so what happens is they bring with them ideas. Well, I've always lived under socialism. I've always lived under poverty-like conditions. I'm used to a $5 a day wage. So when somebody says, I'll pay you $5 an hour, it sounds pretty good. I'm increasing my pay 24 times. So I have no doubt that illegal immigrants are coming here to benefit themselves. But an American citizen, someone who came here for another country, took the oath, came in through our legal process, and a difficult one because we only want the best and the brightest. Those people aren't here to benefit themselves. They are here, why? To benefit us, the American citizens, and they want to be part of that. I want to be part of that. The people who are an immigrant, legal immigrant, say, well, I don't want the way I lived back in XYZ country. I want the American way, and I swear an oath to say, I'll live as you do. Illegal immigrant doesn't do that. How do you stop that, though? How do you stop somebody who just wants to come here for more money? Because I'd do it, too, if I could. Well, the first step is a physical barrier. You have to make it difficult, if not impossible, to get here, physically get here, right? You have to bar immigration from countries that don't provide the proper paperwork or where the people live under a system which is injurious to the American way of life, one that does not support individual liberties, that does not support limits on government. Our president has tried to do that and has been thwarted by our judiciary system, but that's the American system. Okay, I'm not willing to change that, but we can sure build a physical barrier. Donald Trump was the first person to come along and say, hey, we should have a wall. Why can't we have a wall? We should have a wall. We should have a manned and patrolled barrier to guard our borders. And I'm for building a wall on the Canadian border just as much as I am the southern border with Mexico. But the Mexican border is more problematic than the Canadian border by most standards. It's true we have illegal immigration from Canada and some terrorism has come in from Canada. But the big problem, when thousands of people are now marching, as I speak, to our border to try and bum rush our American way of life, because that's what they're going to do. We need a physical barrier. We need to make it difficult. We don't need to make it easy. When you don't have a physical barrier and you could just walk here, whew, I'd be willing to do that. Right? Weather turns good. October, it happens. Spring, it happens. Let's go. Everybody, posse up. We're all going to make a bum rush. And then, of course, when those crowds start to move toward your border, other people go, hey, this is our chance. I can sneak in with that crowd and others join. Maybe people who aren't willing or aren't wanting to become the American way from life and want to damage it too could be coming in. We know of the cases of criminality of some illegal immigrants. Sure, they try and come in too. Try to exploit loopholes in our system. There are lawyers down trying to show people ways to get in here legally. They drag along a child because they know it's been used as a political tool against those who want to build a barrier. That's why mass migration of families is now suddenly spiking and going up through the roof. There's no barrier. No physical barrier. It's easier to bring a child in if there's no physical barrier. It's a little tough to throw a 3-year-old over a 40-foot wall, isn't it? That barrier should also be manned, should be patrolled. serviced, in other words, towers, border patrol agents, aerial surveillance, electronic surveillance. Everyone thinks it has to be one or the other. No, we should have both. It's that much of a problem. You talk about thousands of people. Can you imagine an extra 1,000 people in your community that don't want to live under your laws, that just want to set up a shack on the corner? We get upset when our neighbor paints the house purple, because, and that's why we have HOA rules, right? Do you think someone who comes here under a barrier or under a wire or whatever is too concerned about the HOA rules? To them, that's nothing. They crossed 100 miles of hot desert, paid someone thousands of dollars, carried in drugs or whatever to get here. They don't care about whether their housing isn't up to snuff. They don't care if they put 15 people in a house designed for 8 or 6 or 4. That's the way they lived down in whatever country they came from. This is paradise here, right? This house has air conditioning and running clean water and indoor plumbing. The house they came from had dirt floors and nothing but the open windows to cool them off. So this is a benefit. This is a boon. Their standards are different than ours. And that's okay to understand that different cultures have different standards. What's not okay is to bring those standards here. No, we have certain standards. Here it is, right in this little book. Why don't you learn about it? Oh, yeah, well, that's okay. That's why you do it? Okay. And then once the people agree to that, live by our standards, by our laws, our code of justice, well, you can't build a house on the lawn. You have to paint it the right color. These are all our laws, HOA laws. But it also gets more complex. Trial by jury. Government can't do this, can't do that. Well, that sounds good. I'll live by those laws. And if you, as an American citizen who is an immigrant, what they call a naturalized citizen, you want to help change those laws, we have a process for that too. You can run for office. You can petition your legislature. That's okay too. No one's complaining about that. Well, some people are. But mass migration, how do you stop that? Well, like I said, the first thing you need to do is build a physical barrier, but you also need to put a legal barrier. Because there are people that are going to cross the physical barrier no matter how difficult it is. But at least with a physical barrier, you slow it down, right? You also eliminate using our loopholes in our system. It's harder to bring a kid across, for instance. When you have to climb a barrier, it's easier for us to round you up, basically. Because it takes time to climb over it. It also is more expensive. But we also have to close the legal loopholes. We have to have immigration reform, change in our laws. No more benefiting from having a child with you. You know, when the left complain about these detention centers with children in them, I always say, what would you do? Someone comes here with a child. Doesn't matter if it's their child or not. That makes no difference to me. What do you do with the child while you give that person their fair day in court? Because we have laws. Even illegal immigrants are entitled to due process under our law. That's how great a country we have. You think you're entitled to due process in Saudi Arabia? Look at Khashoggi. That's why I said that's a lesson for today's show. You have due process here. You get your day in court. You have to go to the judge and say, oh, Mr. Judge, I'm here because a bunch of drug dealers want to kill me and my family, and conditions are bad in my country. I can't find work, but my life is in danger if I go back. It's so bad. Oh, well, you can stay. And we do that. Most people are turned down, but with proper representation, in other words, somebody who speaks our language, knows our laws, a lawyer, which we provide at our expense for these people. You're entitled to your day in court. You get due process. What do you do with the children while they're doing that? Because that takes time. May take 6 to 8 weeks, sometimes longer, as the case goes through our system, because the system is overburdened now. What do you do with the children, Mr. Leftist? We tried turning him over for adoption. That didn't work. They just disappeared, right? They end up with some other family here, and we don't track it. We can't possibly track it. We don't track people who are here legally, despite what you're being told. Well, maybe if you carry a cell phone, which is why I don't carry him. But again, that's a show for another day. That didn't work. People were horrified that we lost track of children. We have no idea. Illegal immigrants know it too. That's why they bring children here for nefarious purposes, such as sex trafficking. That's why we have to stop it. Illegal immigration is becoming a pathway to criminality. I'm not saying illegal immigrants are all criminals. Well, they are because they broke the law to get here, but you know what I'm saying. They're not all bank robbers. They're not all murderers. They're not all drunks and rapists. That's not what the president is saying. There's a certain element. We have to stop it. So that's why we have to put legal barriers as well as a physical barrier. We have to say, no, no, no. We're going to hold your children in a facility until we determine whether it's your child, whether their case is separate from yours, whether you can continue on into the United States with those children. And in the meantime, we provide a safe, clean environment. We have guards. You know why? So that no one preys on those children. And we provide them lessons in what America is all about, because if they're going to live here, they need to learn that system too, so that they assimilate. Because people, as I said, assimilate, do better in our society. That's why we're doing it. We're not locking people up like Nazis. The ICE, Immigration Customs, the Border Patrol are not stormtroopers. And if you have a better alternative, Mr. Leftist, Mr. Celebrity, please let us know. But in the meantime, we're going to do the best we can. And by and large, most people who are illegal immigrants who come here with children are provided a safer place to live and survive in while they're having their due process than they came from. That's important. We can't just send them back. You can't send a child back across the border randomly without any adult supervision or even with their adult. It's not right, because a child is deserving due process too. And the adult that came with them is their representative. That's the way it works under our laws. You screaming about it isn't going to change that. Want to change the law? Okay. Then that's different. Petition your representative or your congressman or your senator or whatever. But don't just say they're stormtroopers. Don't call them names. They're just doing their job. And that's providing a safe place for people to arrive here while they receive due process. Okay? Concentration camp people didn't receive due process. They were fed potato soup and starved to death, and when there were too many of them, they threw them in ovens. That isn't happening here. Any description of the people that work in those facilities, any description of those facilities as such, is unfair, malign, and it is done for political purposes. The point is, we have to stop mass migration with a physical and legal barrier into this country. And by and large, the Democrats are putting obstacles in the way of us doing that, and therefore putting this nation at risk. Because people that come here, as I said, end up in abject poverty. Because if you're an illegal immigrant and you came here through nefarious means, either by overstaying your visa, bringing in a child, claiming asylum, whatever Mickey Mouse way you decided to stay here, you are more likely to be poor than not, eventually, even if you're not now. Because you can't benefit in our system. You can't legally own property. Well, there's ways to do it. Our banks are complicit in that because they want to make money off them, exploit their own poverty. But you can't own a business, not legally. Not unless you steal an identity of someone else can you work here legally. You can't benefit from our systems. You can't make more of yourself. See, that's the thing about illegal immigration. You can't be more than what you are if you're an illegal immigrant. You can't succeed in the way the American dream says you can. The American dream is not buying a home. And that's bullshit. The American dream is making something more of yourself tomorrow than you are today. That's the American dream. That's something that you can't do in other cultures, other nations, particularly third world nations. The vertical movement of people from one social strata to another is something that is iconic of American society. And an illegal immigrant cannot benefit from those systems. They can benefit from our social welfare systems, and becomes a problem. How do you solve that, though? How do you correct the poverty that exists in third world communities that are here in America? Let's talk about that next. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Never makes it easy. And you know I'll do for us whatever seems right. But it may take a while before I change the rules. Use your eyes.
Okay, we're quickly running out of time here, so let's make this brief. Let's say you got here through illegal immigration. Let's say you crossed the barrier. You got past the judge. Now what? Well, you set up shop, right? You get an apartment, you get a phone, you get a job. But let's say you're an illegal immigrant. Let's say you circumvented the system, crawled in under the wire or over the wall or around it in the ocean. Let's just say you're living in a downtrodden community, you're living in poverty. How do you get out? How does government solve that? Because that's going to happen no matter, I don't care what kind of wall you build or what kind of legal barrier you put up. There are going to be illegal immigrants in your country, and they're typically going to congregate and set up little third world communities, and usually it's in inner cities. How do you solve that? Well, you could round them up. That's part of it. I mean, you could eventually just ship them all out. But in the meantime, what do you do about the poverty conditions that exist in your cities? As I said, poverty exists because of poor decision-making, not for lack of money. You can educate people. That's the best way. You can say, this is our system. This is our system of laws. This is our language. You can stop enabling poverty. You can stop subsidizing. That's how you stop it. You don't say to people, here, here's some food stamp money. Here's some housing. Here, here, here. Take this, take that, that. That doesn't solve anything because now their decision-making process is being rewarded. Not that anyone wants to live in poverty conditions, but you understand that if they're getting benefits from living a certain way, that's less of a motivation for them not to change their ways. You need to cut most of that off. I've always been a proponent of the best way to solve abject poverty, which comes in a large part from illegal immigration, as providing benefits on a limited basis. You say, here's some food stamps, here's a phone, here's some housing, but you're only going to get it for 6 months or 8 months. Now, you can only do that in a society which is truly capitalistic with a low unemployment rate. Because if you have a high unemployment rate, where the business is in control, then people will never get a job. That's what we saw in the Obama years. People on unemployment for years because they couldn't get a job. Unemployment sky high. Labor pool out of control. That's changing. That's good. We're headed in the right direction. That's a start. It's only been 2 years. Got to give it more. But what do you do in the meantime? I say, and I've always said this from the beginning, the way to solve it is to limit the benefits. Here's a lot of food stamps. Instead of giving them like $115 a month, give them $500 a month, right? Give them phones and whatever. But you're only going to get it for 6 months or 8 months or a year. I don't think anything more than a year is necessary. You'll get it. No matter what your social status, no matter what your income, you come here and you can't get a job and you're living in poverty and you don't have stuff, here you go. Here's a good start in life. That's the way you do it. Or somebody who's had misfortune in life, we'll pick you up for a few months until you can get back started again. Now, you'll have to start all over again. Maybe you have to push a broom again or whatever. Here's a booklet on our English language. If you're willing, go sit through a class and learn our Constitution and our English language again, okay? Oh, listen, we can provide different ways. Here's a booklet on this. Here's a booklet on that. But we're not going to get involved in the process of self, of capitalism. You got to find a job on your own. And you better do it quick. After that, you get nothing. And if you starve to death, it's your own problem. So you better start thinking about what you're going to do. Here's a booklet on it. Here's what to do. Well, there's jobs that we can help you provide. Here's a list of jobs. I remember when it used to be like that. We didn't provide training for jobs. When you got unemployment, you say, here, what'd you do this week? Did you get a job? Oh, you didn't? Well, here's somebody who's hiring. Go to them. Go talk to them. They'll hire you. That's what needs to change. We need to stop subsidizing poverty. I would rather give people more money in the beginning for a limited time than just give them money all the time. Because that's what you have now. You have a permanent underclass because it's easy. If you're getting food stamps and you're getting Obama phones and you're getting Section 8 housing, it's okay to stay as a Walmart, to make a career of being a Walmart cashier or whatever. I'm not to put the blame on Walmart. But you understand this. Being poor means you don't work 40 hours a week. You work 80. I remember when I was a kid, we weren't poor as a kid. But my father still worked two jobs or three jobs as the need came to us so that his family would have a better life, so that me would have a better life today than he had when he was my age. That's the American dream. That's what people have forgotten because it's easy. Well, if I stay on this job at a low pay, I could get my food stamps. If I take a raise or I take a new job, I'm going to lose my food stamps. I'm going to lose my phone. I'm going to lose my Section 8 housing. If you limit it to 8 months or 6 months or a year or whatever, then people will say, man, I better find a better job and quick. Or maybe I should work two jobs. Or maybe I could supplement my income with Uber driving or any of a million things. Because it's better to push a broom than starve. And that is directly related to illegal immigration. Because if you have a ready supply of people living on food stamps, on Obama phones, on Section 8 housing. There are people that are willing to walk away or take a job as a career lettuce picker. Someone who comes here illegally becomes a member of that system, a permanent underclass. And that's why you need to solve abject poverty first. Because it corrects the problem of illegal immigration. Somebody is not so willing to travel here illegally if they know they're not going to benefit from the system in 6 to 8 months, because they can't, because they have to find a legal job. That's why you tighten up the rules about employment, identity theft, things like that. You conduct investigations into businesses that have questionable hiring practices. They try to throw Joe Arpaio in jail for doing that. That's how you solve it. That's how you solve poverty in your country too. People start taking second and third jobs. And guess what? You'll find less people buying food stamps and less people on Obama phones and less people on section housing. Makes for a growing society. Makes for people desiring things like raises. Makes for a virtual upward mobility in your lower classes to middle and higher classes. And it also helps reduce the debt and the burden on state and federal governments. Because as less people require less things and more people take second jobs, more people move into management, higher level supervisory jobs, better pay, then you'll also find they pay more taxes. Everything goes away when you have a capitalistic system. That's why illegal immigration threatens it. And that's why solving poverty, not by subsidizing it, but by correcting bad behavior, eventually eliminates a lot of need for illegal immigration. Because that's what corporations tell us. That's what big companies say. Oh, we always need immigration is good for the economy. No, it isn't. It's terrible for the economy because you have no vertical upward mobility. An economy is generated by upward mobility in the transactions that we have every day. Buying things, buying like new toasters, new ovens. People who are abjectly poor, what do? They get by fixing old things, exchanging goods directly rather than through our system of markets, purchase, and taxation. Going to garage sales and living off the cast-offs of a wealthier society? Is that what you want? Is that what made America great? America wasn't made great on a yard sale. It was made great through what? Capitalism, consumption, buying and selling things, legal transactions. That's what made America great. Companies making better and new improved products, better than their old ones, more technology, more investment. You could be part of that system too. You can be a worker, put some of your money toward the future, and you'll think about things like that, putting money toward your future, working a second job, maybe not working a second job, maybe going into supervision, taking that raise, taking that bonus, taking on more responsibility, earning the right. That's the way you become wealthy. It's good decision-making. You're now encouraging good decision-making. Geez, I better get off the alcohol. I need to get a better job, or I need to get a second job because I've got fired from my last two from drinking. And then we'll have money to help those people on a medical basis rather than on a stupid basis, locking them up. Locking people up who are drunk is no solution. You need to get them off the booze. You need to get them off the drugs. Locking them up just creates another permanent underclass of prisoners, which is what is a big problem in America. We don't have time to go into that. I got to talk a little bit about criminality and some of these attacks that are going on for political purposes. We'll be right back.
Well, the world turns, and a hungry little boy with a runny nose plays in the street as a cold wind blows in the ghetto.
Last word. There's some recently an increase in violence, political violence here in America. People in particular are attacking people of the Republican Party. And largely, it's not so much the calls to action by Democrat leaders. That's a problem. That's a big problem. But it's basically about the dehumanization of people on the right wing. Telling people, hey, listen, that person is evil. That person is a Nazi. It's okay to punch a Nazi. It's never okay to resort to violence. Never. Resorting to violence is how criminal societies exist. It's how the kings, it's how Khashoggi got murdered. That's when you resort to violence, when you dehumanize people. That guy is no good because he is this ABCD. This is why I'm very critical of people on the right wing as well who claim that people on the left wing are evil. Nobody's... When they take a different view of how a country should be run, that's not evil. That's a difference of opinion. There are very few people that I would qualify as, does evil exist? Yeah, sure. But there's very few people, because of their political opinions, that I would call evil. Evil is somebody that tries to deliberately sow violence and dissension. I can name a few of them, but I won't hear on the show. Someone who actively calls for other people to act violently against others. That's an act of evil. There's no situation here in the United States which calls for violent action. If you want to take an issue in a third world country where there's a dictator or a strongman, well, that's a little different story. I can see that. Such as in 1776 in the American Revolution. You had a problem with a king, right? King George. But I don't think anybody called King George evil. But they picked up a gun and they defended their right of self-governance. That's a little different here because you have the vote. You have governance by consent. There's no reason to resort to violence here in America. None at all. You can change it with simply going to the ballot box. I would encourage everyone who thinks that things should change to go to the ballot box. Register to vote. Speak up. I'm all for that. I never attack anyone, right or left, celebrity or not, who calls for an action to vote. Never will you see me attack a celebrity who is on the side of, let's get out the vote. I'm all for that. I'm all for freedom of speech. I'm all for political activism. Sure, everybody has a right to say what they mean. They don't have a right to call for violence. They don't have a right to call for incivility. Running people out of restaurants, throwing rocks through windows, wielding of bats and black masks, that's what I'm against. There's no reason at all why anyone who is a political activist or in a protest march needs to wear a mask here in the United States. Not here. Because it's not illegal. Unless you plan to do an illegal activity. Acts of violence, acts of vandalism, acts of terrorism. That's what we're seeing from the left. That's what we're seeing that's going on in a lot of our cities, and that needs to be stopped. That's why every person in leadership, Democrat and Republican alike, needs to call out violence where they see it. No, they need to disavow the resistance movement, disavow the Antifa movement, disavow anyone that has anything to do with violent action here in the United States, because there's no reason for it. You can change it in a heartbeat by going to the ballot box. The election of Donald Trump proved it. Do you think anyone in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party wanted Donald Trump as president? Of course not. But the American people went to the ballot box and changed it. And America is changing dramatically. You know, they talk about Obama, you know, the photo, the poster, change. You want change? Donald Trump is it, man. This is a guy that comes out when he wins a lawsuit, calls a woman a horse face. When was the last time you ever heard of a politician doing that, right? That's what we wanted. We didn't want the stuffed shirts like Mitt Romney. We didn't want the low energy Jeb Bushes. We wanted somebody like Donald Trump. Says it like it is. Tells it like it is. Right or wrong? That's what we wanted. That's what we got. We went to the ballot box and we did it. Donald Trump isn't president because of violent protests. Donald Trump isn't president because people in black masks broke a Starbucks windows out. He's president because why? People went to the ballot box. You can do it too. If you think that he's a bad president, go to the ballot box. If you think the Democrats have an answer for you, go to the ballot box. Chasing Ted Cruz out of a restaurant, throwing a rock through a window, beating someone over the head with a stick because of their ideas, that isn't anything that is representative of what made America great. And we are out of time for today and for the week. I hope you enjoyed this week's show. We'll be back next week. I haven't decided on what we're going to do. If you donate $10 a month or more, you'll get access to tomorrow's show where I'll discuss what I talked about this week and why. It's kind of a more of a fireside friendly chat kind of show. That's what we do every Friday. Kind of an insider's thing. I say things not for public consumption, just to let you know where your money's being spent too. Sometimes I do updates on what we're doing here on the show. Sometimes I make them public. Sometimes I do it on the private show. It's worth it for the $10 a month. I think you found that most of the people who have donated $10 a month stay $10 a month donors. A couple have left, but most stay. There's a reason. They're enjoying these Friday shows. They're enjoying seeing their money work for them. The show get bigger, better. And I'm asking those of you to be a part of it. That's why even just a small donation, I value them all the same. I'm probably the easiest host to get a hold of. I control my Facebook account, my Twitter account, me personally. That's me at the computer screen. Almost always. I would say 99.9% of the time it's me. Right now it is, that's for sure. Help me get there. Donate today. And we'll be back on Monday if you don't. If you do, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Take care, folks. Have a good one.
Earning an executive MBA at Georgetown isn't the path of least resistance, but it does come with the greatest reward. Benefit from our strong alumni network, renowned faculty, DC location, and global residencies. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/EMBA.